Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Mandel. I am your host on today's program. Openness on the airwaves and on the internet. Is it true? At a price. We have some new announcements from Comcast and the FCC. We'll be talking about on today's show. You do want to stay tuned. Well, thanks again for tuning in to Media Geek. Today's program is the first official program not being produced at WEFT, Community Radio WEFT, which is the home station and the station where Media Geek got its start back in March of 2002. As Media Geek celebrates its sixth year on the air, it is also moving here to Chicago, in the Chicago area. I have made a move away from the Champaign-Urbana area, where Media Geek has found its home, and where I've had my home for the last 14 years. And I've taken a job at Northwestern University, working for the School of Communication, and doing audio and video support for that school. And I am also set to become the staff advisor to station WNUR, which is the student station here at Northwestern University. A very, very nice and cool station. And with luck, Media Geek will be produced from the WNUR studios very shortly, and possibly will also find its way onto the WNUR airwaves, broadcasting to Evanston, Illinois, and Chicago, Illinois. But for the moment, I'm in temporary studio digs, which kind of means wherever I can find them. But I'm still producing the show because WEFT is still carrying it for the time being at 5:30 on Fridays at 90.1 FM. And, of course, lots of other great stations like Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, are carrying this show as well, and as well all of you who listen to the podcast. So I don't want to let you down, and I want to keep the show going. And sort of an experiment here in community radio, community broadcasting, in the age of the internet. So with that little bit of bookkeeping out of the way, I thought I'd jump into discussing a little bit of some news here. As I said at the top of the show, it's really about openness. And we start off with an announcement made by FCC Chairman Kevin Martin at the Cellular Industry Trade Show on April 1st in Las Vegas. And no, it was not an April Fool's joke, unfortunately. But what Kevin Martin told the group there is that he is circulating to his fellow commissioners an order dismissing a petition for declaratory ruling filed by Skype. Give you a little background. Of course, many of you have heard of Skype and probably have used Skype. It's a internet chat voice over IP service, which is free when you go between computers that you can use to talk to just about anyone around the world who is on the internet, and can also be bridged over to regular telephones, usually for a cost. And Skype had made a petition to the FCC wanting to apply what is known as the Carter phone requirements to wireless phones, to cellular phones. And the Carter phone requirements come out of a 1968 ruling by the FCC regarding AT&T. Prior to 1968, AT&T had to be able to pass off on any device that was attached to the phone system. And of course, at that time, AT&T was a national monopoly, ruling all of long distance and most local telephone companies. There were some smaller operators operating throughout the nation, but AT&T, of course, was by and large the monopoly just about everywhere you went. And prior to 1968, any machine, be it a fax machine, which did exist in the 60s, a modem, which had been invented by the 60s, or anything else, a telephone, had to be approved by AT&T. Your phones at that time generally came from Western Electric, which is owned by AT&T, and in those days, some people may remember, even going into the 70s and 80s, mostly people rented their phones from a phone company, often for as much as several dollars a month, which sounds kind of funny now when you realize that you can buy a phone for several dollars. But people would actually rent their phones from the phone company for the entirety of the time that they had phones. Purchasing a phone was generally prohibitive in cost, and only phones approved by AT&T could be attached. In 1968, the FCC undid that, and that allowed the ultimate innovation of new devices, such as the fax machine, but for the fax machine to become something from less esoteric to into the 80s to something most people could own. It allowed the innovation of cordless phones, all sorts of different phones, and made it really possible that you didn't have to rent an expensive phone from the phone company, but could go down to your local department store and buy one for just a few dollars. It really sparked a lot of innovation and helped to undo the sort of stranglehold that AT&T had over the country's telecommunications. It allowed, of course, the development of modems and bulletin board systems and the precursors to the internet, since a lot of people connected to the internet and still do connect to the internet using telephone lines, using modems. A lot of that would have been stunted or possibly not even happened, especially for average consumers, had this decision not been made. And you know, taking into account the fact that AT&T having to pass off on all devices that were attached to its network by law was sort of an artificial constraint. There didn't seem to be a very good reason to require that. Certainly, there are standards in order to make sure that it technically will work and will not cause harm to the network, but otherwise no real good requirement, the reason for that requirement to be true. And so what Skype did is they petitioned the FCC to say that those same requirements should apply to existing wireless networks, and specifically cellular networks. And people in the United States are quite familiar with the fact that, generally speaking, the cellular phone you get is tied directly to the service you use. And while many different phones work on sets of spectrum that can work with AT&T wireless or might also work with T-Mobile, generally speaking, you get a phone that's specifically tied to the network you use. And this is not true necessarily in the rest of the world. In Europe, in fact, it's quite common for someone to buy a phone and then choose what network they want to work with and simply buy the little SIM cards, as they're called, and place it in the phone. If you get fed up with one network, you simply go get a new SIM card and join another. In the U.S., that isn't so easy to do. And for your average phone, maybe that's not so important, but as a lot of people have learned regarding the iPhone, a product and a very innovative product a lot of people are interested in getting, you can only use it if you are an AT&T subscriber or become an AT&T subscriber. So if you wanted to use T-Mobile, if you wanted to use U.S. Cellular, you want to use Verizon, you can't have an iPhone. It just simply will not work because there's an exclusive contract between AT&T and Apple. And in many cases, Apple releases software updates that cripples iPhones that people have been able to hack to work on other cellular networks. So you can see that the situation we have with wired telephones, with plain old telephone system, where you can buy any device from just about any company, and so long as it works over a phone line, you can use it, is not true in the cellular world. You pick a vendor, you've pretty much also picked the phones that you'll have access to. And if you want a very innovative phone, you can only go with one particular vendor. You won't necessarily be able to get the same ones on different networks. And Skype, as you can see, is probably a player that would love to be able to start offering its services over wireless networks, but it's not a company which has any wireless spectrum. It's not a cellular company. And also probably is looking to not have to get into bed with any particular wireless provider in the United States, but instead would like to offer a generic phone, which could then be connected to any wireless network. And that is why Skype submitted this petition to the FCC for a declaratory ruling for the FCC to declare that Carter phone requirements do apply to wireless networks. And so what we have here is Chairman Martin saying, and telling the cellular industry trade show kind of before he told anyone else, that he's hoping that the FCC will dismiss this petition. The FCC, of course, is 3 Republicans and 2 Democrats right now, because we have a Republican in the White House. And so often the chairman is able to get things passed by 3-2 margins. We'll have to see what his colleagues, the Democrats, think about that. But one of the reasons that Chairman Martin says that they don't need to rule that the Carter phone requirements apply to wireless networks is because of the fact that Verizon has recently made a promise. Note that this is only a promise. Has made a promise to open up its network to other devices and is hoping that other cellular carriers will follow the company in that. AT&T probably is less likely to, since it stands to make a mint from iPhones. But Verizon has made the promise, and it seems that Chairman Martin is willing to take that promise rather than think that maybe something would need to be done in regulation. Says it's in light of the industry's embrace of a more open wireless platform. He says, quote, it would be premature to adopt any other requirements across the industry, end quote. And while that sounds all good, I'll have to remind people that if we go back about 12 years, around 1996, when the Telecommunications Act was last passed and several other state laws were passed in that interim in the late 90s, we were promised by the precursors to the current AT&T companies like Ameritech and SBC, as well as Verizon, that we would start seeing 100 megabit speeds of internet to our homes. If only these companies were given some level of regulatory relief, both at the state level and at the federal level. And currently, I don't have it, do you? So promises are promises, but they certainly aren't any guarantees. The other thing that Chairman Martin noted that he thinks shows the industry's embrace of a more open wireless platform regards the 700 megahertz spectrum auction, which was the subject of last week's show, because Verizon was the top bidder for a particular slice of spectrum in an auction where if the reached a certain level, a certain reserve price, the new requirements for openness, requiring that any device be allowed on that spectrum, would kick in. And indeed, the price reached that, and so Verizon, for that chunk of spectrum, which can be used for wireless devices, phones, internet, etc., they'll be forced by regulatory consent to open it up. It's not really something that they're doing that they necessarily want to do. It's something which, in order to get, as a condition of getting that spectrum and getting it at the price that they had to pay, they'll have to do. That's what Kevin Martin is leaning on for that. And you are listening to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesbendell. I'm your host. Check out Media Geek online at the Media Geek website and blog at MediaGeek.net. And, of course, the radio show is at radio.MediaGeek.net. You can download it in MP3 or Ogg Vorbis. Subscribe to the podcast to get it automatically downloaded, or you can just listen in your browser, radio.mediageek.net. If you have any comments about the program, I always love to hear them, paul@mediageek.net. In today's program, I'm leaning on the critical examination part, talking as it is about some wireless, and I'll be transitioning over to the internet and to issues of network neutrality. And the reason why I continue to cover this on Media Geek is because our ability to communicate is what's at hand here, our ability to communicate one-to-one or to a mass audience. That is one of the great things that we've gained with the internet and with network technologies, is the ability to communicate on a scope and with a number of people that was previously much more difficult to do. It has really opened it up for mass communication to more people. But in order to communicate, we have to be able to send messages. And in many cases, we have to be able to do it in new and innovative ways. And so our ability to do this either in wireless, to perhaps have very fast network speeds from wireless devices to hit the internet, much better than what we can do now, or to be able to do it on the current wired internet, is all very important and really can affect our ability to not just be consumers and receivers information, but to be producers and distributors of information and not have it artificially limited, that ability, only to the largest, most enriched companies in the United States and the world. So one of the big pieces of news that went by in the past week is the fact that Comcast and BitTorrent have apparently reached an agreement in order for Comcast to quit slowing down BitTorrent traffic. Now, this is a story I've been covering for many, many weeks, going all the way back to last year. And so a lot of you will probably recall that Comcast got caught red-handed blocking traffic that uses the peer-to-peer file sharing protocol known as BitTorrent. And while BitTorrent is certainly used by people who are sharing copyrighted content that they don't have the right to share, it's also used by people who want to share things they have a right to share, especially large files, people who might develop independent software, people who may be developing their own movies, their own radio shows and everything. Since bandwidth costs money, BitTorrent gives a very effective way for lots of people to contribute a little bit of bandwidth for the download of a file. So if you're a creator, maybe you're a musician who created a whole album that you'd like to share for free on the internet, you could use BitTorrent to really offset the cost of that sharing, because every person who downloads it can therefore be also a share uploading it. And it's not like everybody has to download it from that one person, but everybody just contributes a little bit of bandwidth. Well, Comcast got caught red-handed blocking this traffic, and not just merely blocking it, but actually using a technique wherein the Comcast network would act like it was your computer and so respond to other BitTorrent clients saying that, oh no, can't respond. So pretending like it's your computer and slowing down the works. Of course, this could be a problem for BitTorrent's business model, since in addition to the free BitTorrent client, there's also something called BitTorrent DNA, which they sell in order to commercialize this process so that media companies can embed the BitTorrent program into their media players. You would probably click through, but it's where you would watch a video, and part of that video would download to your computer, and then you'd actually be sharing parts of that video with other people on the internet. It allows then, say, the person providing the video not to have to shoulder all the costs for all those downloads. And it's something which they're commercializing. But they are slightly different protocols. And one of the worries that I've expressed is that what that really indicates is that it's sort of a two-tiered internet. And this agreement between BitTorrent and Comcast does little to allay my fears. A few weeks ago, we actually heard from a representative of BitTorrent on a conference call answering my question about the about this potential of a two-tier internet, wherein a company who can pay and work with a big company like Comcast or any other ISP to make sure the network traffic flows just fine, can get it to flow just fine, but if some new company, a new entrepreneur, or maybe a very savvy programmer developed a new peer-to-peer protocol or software that maybe were better than BitTorrent, they might be subject to the same blocking from Comcast and its peers and might lack the industry power, might lack the money and the influence to be able to get that Comcast or other ISP to work with them, rendering what might be a superior product absolutely ineffective because it might be blocked at the network level. So that's my concern. So part of the agreement between Comcast and BitTorrent is that Comcast pledges to experiment with ways to more effectively manage traffic on its network at peak times. And then rather than slow traffic by certain types of applications, which is an important thing, right? And that's pretty much the principle of network neutrality, that the internet, that the network should be neutral with regard to whatever application you're running. It's all just data. So instead, Comcast will slow traffic for those users who consume the most bandwidth. And specifically, they said that it's the most bandwidth wherein there are sending data, which they're uploading without downloading. And that still concerns me, because the way that you share a video or you share an audio program online, while I don't use BitTorrent to distribute the Media Geek radio show, I do upload it to my website And often during that time, I'm not downloading anything else. I'm only uploading. And I really wouldn't want my traffic derailed at that particular time, since that would make my life a little miserable and make it difficult for me to share my program. But indeed, this Comcast sort of coming around and sort of saying it intends to obey the principle of network neutrality more or less, but because it was pushed by BitTorrent. And once again, I say these are promises, and I have less trust that they're anything besides promises. But it really takes a BitTorrent to even get these concessions from a Comcast. And as I did hear from Comcast a few, and as I did hear from BitTorrent a few weeks ago, they said that they would be willing to work with ISPs to make their protocols more friendly to their networks. But BitTorrent, of course, has the resources to do that, and other innovators, nonprofits, or individuals may not have those resources. Interestingly enough, though, while Chairman Martin was busy giving a wet kiss to the cellular industry, nevertheless, he did release remarks in response to the Comcast BitTorrent deal, and he shows himself to be a bit more critical, saying, quote, "I am concerned, though, that Comcast has not made clear when they will stop this discriminatory practice. It appears this practice will continue throughout the country until the end of the year, and in some markets even longer." He goes on to say, quote, "The commission will remain vigilant in ensuring that consumers have the ability to access the lawful content of their choice on the internet," end quote. And as I'll mention in a minute or two here, there is a hearing coming up, a second hearing on this issue of network neutrality and network management on April 17th at Stanford University, being held by the FCC. But regarding Comcast a bit more, in the wake of hearing that they've struck a deal with BitTorrent, they're now saying that they will roll out extreme high-speed internet to subscribers in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area, with download speeds that top out at 50 megabits per second, and then uploads that are capped at 5 megabits per second. And that's pretty fast. Probably most people who have DSL or cable modems see their download speeds topping out probably at a maximum of 5 megabits, and likely only are able to upload in the neighborhood of a half a megabit to a full megabit. So it's a general 10-time increase of speeds over what most people experience. However, this will not be cheap. It will be $150 per month for consumers and $200 a month for business class service. So if you want that kind of speed, you'll be paying for it, and significantly more, I think, than you pay for it in Europe or in South Korea, although it is an increase in speed. And it doesn't quite, though, match the 100 megabit speeds that we were promised to have at this time some 10, 12 years ago. Of course, it'd be great speeds to have if you wanted to distribute things by BitTorrent, although it's unclear yet, as Chairman Martin noted, whether or not that will be possible in the immediate future in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. So moving forward then, there is another hearing on the topic of network neutrality, network management, on April 17th at Stanford University. The location is the Dinkelspiel Auditorium, 471 Lagunita Drive, in Palo Alto, California. And scheduled to last from noon to around 7 o'clock, including 2 hours of public comment from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m., the public is invited and welcome to attend, and I guess you'll be able to line up or sign up to make your public comment if you're in the area from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. But of course, it's first come, first served, and there is limited seating. You'll recall that the last and first hearing on network neutrality held in Massachusetts was a little bit thwarted, or at least public comment was a little bit thwarted, because Comcast ended up being revealed to have hired seat warmers, people who were necessarily interested at all in the hearing itself, asked to hold places, apparently, for Comcast employees who never actually turned up, thereby ticking up seats for that would otherwise be used by interested members of the public who wanted to comment about network neutrality and a free internet and were unable to do so. And it's fairly likely that the scheduling of this second hearing may be due partially to the fact that Comcast pulled this seat-warming strategy at the Harvard hearing. And of course, it's a slightly different audience as well there in Palo Alto, California, at the heart of Silicon Valley, since a lot of large internet companies like Google and Amazon have been strong supporters of strong network neutrality. So that should be a very interesting hearing, and maybe perhaps the FCC will choose to even have a third, maybe in the Midwest or in the South, to complement having these hearings on the coast. It's not just a coastal issue. The issue of our ability to use the internet to communicate freely and to distribute our independent media freely counts to all of us. Certainly, I'll have some more news in the run-up to this hearing as I learn more, and we'll have some good information and wrap up after the hearing happens. Unfortunately, I won't be able to go, but maybe they'll decide to hold a hearing here in Chicago. Hint, hint. I'm not sure anyone in the FCC is actually listening. But that's what I'm trying to cover, because it is about our ability to communicate and to communicate freely and not merely be able to simply post a few things to a blog, but be able to create multimedia content, to not have to be part of a major label, to not have to be on a major commercial radio station, but to be able to make your podcasts and distribute them inexpensively, not because we have a right to have it inexpensively, but because truly it is inexpensive. Truly, it is a relatively inexpensive technology. And while companies like Comcast might want to make greater and greater profits in a true competitive environment where we have more than a cable and a telephone provider providing internet, we should be able to get these services and be able to communicate freely at a variety of different costs quite freely without having to worry about having our traffic blocked because we don't use the program that Comcast says it would like us to use because it's worried about our programming, about the things we create, competing with the programming that it wants you to buy.
This brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with more news and views in our media environment. In the meantime, check out the Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. You can listen to and download the program at radio.mediageek.net, where you can also subscribe to the podcast. If you have any comments about the program, I'd love to read them. Send them to paul@mediageek.net. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and also is heard on 12 other community stations across North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, KWMD in Kosilov in Anchorage, Alaska, Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, CHMA in Sackville, New Brunswick, WBCR in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. The Media Geek Radio Show is available for free to any non-commercial community station. Just send email to paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for